2020 now ushers in the new decade, along with a timely reminder of how precarious things actually are beneath the surface. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. We are finally just released the third edition of the Bitcoin Times. We are digging into that, and there are so many great pieces to dig into, including the already partially recorded Bitcoin is the Great Definancialization, which is Parker Lewis's next in the Gradually Then Suddenly series. That is not today's episode because it is a bit long, but make sure you subscribe so you don't miss it. We are getting into Alex Fetsky's piece. You should know Alex. We had him on the show. We had a great discussion. In fact, it was actually along the lines of what he digs into in this piece. And this is the foreword to the Bitcoin Times. And it is so good. Forgive me if I get a little bit riled up in Guy's take on this one. I feel like this is inevitable. but this is titled Bitcoin and the Legend of Prometheus. Satoshi has given us the gift of fire. And this one is epic. But before we jump in, let's thank the awesome products and services that make this show possible. We have got three awesome sponsors. They are Level.co, the full mobile banking services in Bitcoin, and a free exchange, no trading fees to convert between currencies. Then, of course, we have the best and easiest to use hardware wallet for your Bitcoin cold storage. That is the Bitbox O2. I am a huge fan of this thing, and they have a great holiday special right now where you can get it with the little Bitcoin book included. So definitely check that out. And then lastly, we have the awesome mobile wallet that actually just dropped a really great update with lots of improvements, and now you can add new accounts at will, the Hexa wallet. Non-custodial, privacy-preserving, transaction batching, lots of great features in this thing. If you want to check out all of these awesome products and let them know that I sent you, go to guyswann.com. And yeah, make sure that is two N's. Unless, of course, you want to learn about the Guyana Swansea, then you use one. All right, let's get into today's read. Bitcoin and the Legend of Prometheus by Alex Fetsky. The dawn of a new decade has a knack for conjuring up visions of endings or new beginnings, each which seems to have an affinity to the legendary or supernatural. Two decades since the turn of the century, the dot-com bubble and the Twin Towers, and just a touch over a decade since the great financial crisis, we've seen the world continue to hurtle toward disaster, economically, morally, socially, and structurally. All the while, catastrophe has been kept at bay via the counterbalancing forces of innovation, production, and free speech. 2020 now ushers in the new decade, along with a timely reminder of how precarious things actually are beneath the surface. The kicking of the proverbial can down the road, the incessant hiding of risk, the welfarization of the economy, the unprecedented levels of monetary expansion, the censorship of speech, group identity politics, the introduction of dangerous and draconian mandates for, quote, safety, and the subsequent moral hazard associated with each have all but hollowed out society and made it more fragile than it ever was. The world has continued on this trend, blissfully ignorant to the consequences of such decisions and oblivious to the fact that the next catastrophe would entail not only decades of social and economic destruction through the erosion of personal, private, and natural capital, but that the mandates and precedents from past events would steepen the slippery slope of tyranny and send us to darker depths. Well, it's 2020, and reality caught up to us again. We are reminded of how thinly veiled the freedom and stability of our modern societies truly are. But there is hope. We understand darkness because we've seen the light. We know hot because we've felt the cold. We can call out tyranny because we've experienced freedom. And we know right because we've all done some wrong. So long as we're not beyond the event horizon, we exist in a realm where reality is duality. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And it should come as no surprise that the creation and proliferation of the ultimate tool of personal sovereignty and liberty is happening alongside the rise of the ultimate collectivist techno-dystopia. There's never an evil, large or dark enough, to be all-encompassing. Humans have always risen to the occasion, and this time, it's no different. The darker the night, the brighter the day. The more suffocating the oppression, the more powerful the spirit of freedom. The more fearsome the enemy, the greater the hero. Satoshi is that hero, and we are all Satoshi. In the chapter of history now being written, Satoshi is the modern-day Prometheus who stole fire from the arrogant, self-proclaimed gods of the modern world and gave it back to the people. He planted Bitcoin in 2008, giving us a decade to learn to use it and set the foundation. That prescience is awe-inspiring, and legends will be told of it in the centuries to come. Bitcoin has become the light that will carry us through the hardest of times, and it could not have arrived at a more appropriate time. 2020 accelerated every draconian state agenda the few more prudent of us have been warning or rambling on about for years. The decimation of biological private property rights, i.e. mandated vaccinations and tests for a virus for which you have no symptoms. The forced closure of private businesses that people have put their entire life's work and savings into. Great reset communist agendas and propaganda telling you that, quote, you'll own nothing and be happy. Unhinged monetary and social policies like UBI and MMT that will erode the remaining human capital and natural resources the world has. CBDCs that give central authorities complete control over what you can and cannot earn, what you can and cannot spend your money on, and how much they will pilfer from your accounts. An all-out war on privacy, encryption, and free speech. Social distancing so that local communities are decimated and there's no more connection with your fellow human beings. No more say in whom you can spend your precious time with. Heavy regulation of opinions and discussions across both online and offline mediums. Complete control of the media and the mainstream narrative. And worst of all, the support by people who have been blindly swept up in the hysteria. Despite the evident overreach of the state, the blatantly obvious mistakes, and the series of erroneous mandates made along the way, there are still millions of people supporting the imposition of, quote, more mandates on themselves and their fellow man or woman. Not a moment is taken to scrutinize the claims made by pseudoscientific epidemiologists that want to treat all human beings as if they're numbers on a spreadsheet. But online shaming, daubing on neighbors, calling people grandma killers or conspiracy theorists have become the part-time job of many. These are the same people who will be the first to line up and take a rushed vaccine for a virus with a 99.6% survival rate. Ignorance, hypocrisy, and fear have truly consumed the masses. But in Bitcoin, we find the ultimate counterbalancing forces of truth, consistency, and reliability. The contrast is as stark as it can be, which is why I give thanks to Satoshi. He birthed something that is tied to the very substructure of reality. Something that lives at the nexus of chaos and order, embodies the flow of entropy into structure, and clarifies how we understand time, energy, and objective truth with a capital T. Whilst the sovereignty of the individual and the nature of truth is being decimated from the top down by governments, media, and the intelligentsia of the old world, a tool for ultimate individual sovereignty and pure objective truth emerges from the bottom up for a new world. Like a modern-day Moses coming down from atop the mountain, Satoshi delivered the white paper to the world on October 31st of 2008 and subsequently changed everything. There has likely not been a more transformational time to be alive, and whilst the decade ahead will surely come with a serious set of challenges and the continued erosion of natural law, logic, truth, private property, and freedoms, we should all take a moment to be deeply grateful for the introduction of an ark upon which we can board and from which we can later rebuild. This fire, immune from darkness, will illuminate all that is. People will see it from every corner of the world. They will be drawn to its brilliance. They will come to it because it will shine brightest where and when it is darkest. Bitcoin is the fire. Satoshi was Prometheus. He took it back and passed it on to us. What we do with it now is up to you and I. By Alex Svetsky, December 2020. And that was the opening of the third edition of the Bitcoin Times. All right, let's take a quick break. And I definitely want to dig into this one, and we are going to have so much great stuff from the Bitcoin Times this week, so get ready. So every single exchange in Bitcoin uses the same model, right? They use transaction fees. Level.co believes that the future of Bitcoin is free. They are creating a game-changing service. So they are bringing Bitcoin banking to the U.S. with direct deposits, checks, wire transfers, a debit card, and zero conversion fees. Their profit model is simply to charge a flat rate of $3 for withdrawals, and which actually includes the network fee, and then $5 for same-day bank transfers and wires. And then, of course, they offer additional benefits like a private banker, a world debit card, and autopilot trading for anyone who spends just $9 a month. You have got to check these guys out. If you are in a state that they are available in, they are in 28 so far. And then please come tell me about it so that you can make me jealous. Level.co, LVL.co. You got to check it out. So Alex starts off in this piece. Which, by the way, our conversation, The Death of Nuance, with Alex Svetsky, I think it's like chat 52, maybe? I don't know. I'll link to it in the show notes so you can check it out. It's really, really good conversation, and it's pretty along these same lines. I mean, it is the topic to, you know, dig into, but that there is this weird dichotomy between an explosion of innovation, production, and free speech, and tools for exactly these things at the exact same time. And it's led to this huge splintering of narratives, as I've referred to. I've called it in the past the Great Disillusionment, is that the false narrative that we comfortably believed as what you could call a national community for so long, really kind of a global community, has fallen away. Kind of the facade has broken down, the curtain has been pulled back, and a lot of people still insist that, oh, well, you know, it wasn't the guy's fault. It's, you know, he just has all those levers and things for, you know, just in case something goes wrong. It's not what it looks like. And, you know, there are people clinging to that, millions of people clinging to that still. But I think the curtain has been pulled nonetheless, and it's becoming more and more clear that we don't agree on the story of the truth, I guess you could say. I mean, it always was subjective, or at least in the political sense, it was always subjective, but the consensus has clearly broken down. And I kind of go back and forth wondering if You know, it seems kind of predestined. It seems this odd thing that these are happening at the same times. But if you kind of think of it as a system of incentives and, you know, an organic system, a system of humanity, it makes sense the pressure for those innovations, for that production, for the protection of free speech, and of course for a tool just like Bitcoin, would only grow greater as its need grew greater in the world. But then at the exact same time, it's almost like because of all of those things, it's creating a feedback loop on the other side of things, that the quote-unquote powers that be, that the legacy system, the legitimacy of the old guard, so to speak, is being brought into question. They've doubled down. They've made everything worse in this idea to, it kind of feels like this desperate grab to appear as if they are still in control. Like, it's so obvious that there is this structure, and, you know, all of these are generalizations, but I think they're generally true. Like, they work in establishing a picture in the relationship between these two things, is that we have a system where there is a subset, a very small group of people who are in a form of totalitarian control, that they just get to dictate what the rules are, and they are profoundly incompetent. But they've essentially skirted by for decades on the fact that they're attacking at all of the excess that the market is able to produce, but we've run out of it. We've been so deeply drowned in imbalance, in debts, obnoxious regulation and rules, and just leaders, too many masters. The fact that you have to ask permission, like get explicit, like legitimized permission to do almost anything productive today is ridiculous. It's absolutely mind-boggling. That's not a free country. If you're not hurting somebody, if there is no victim, you should not have to obtain permission from anyone to do what you are doing. And yet, in kind of the legacy structure, this is getting worse at almost every level. The idea that they can just censor speech, or they can compel speech, if it's not comfortable to somebody, that you don't have the right to offend somebody because maybe the truth or what you believe bothers them. I mean, that's just so flatly absurd. And Alex goes into, like, basically just this little list of, you know, what 2020 has made painfully clear. All the problems that have made worse and have compounded on themselves, and all the things that people have been warning for decades that have basically come home to roost. The kicking of the proverbial can down the road, the incessant hiding of risk, and the systemic risk has just become Olympic in size. The welfarization of the economy, the unprecedented levels of monetary expansion, the censorship of speech, group identity politics, the introduction of dangerous and draconian mandates for, quote, safety, and subsequent moral hazard associated with each, that have all but hollowed out society and made it more fragile than it ever was. And it's so crazy how attached to these systems of what is legitimate and what is not so many people are. And the excuses that are being made for what is essentially martial law. And, you know, you can argue all day about the degree. You can say, oh, it's really soft martial law, but that's totally irrelevant. It is about the context of the conversation. These are subjective valuations of what other people should decide being forced upon them. We live in a perfectly subjective political system, and that political system is now involved in every single decision we are allowed to make day in and day out. They are completely unbounded by the Constitution or Bill of Rights. Could not be clearer that almost every single stipulation in both documents has been blatantly violated. every freedom is left up to a utilitarian argument to those in power. Now, the very idea that someone has the right to argue whether or not it's better for society if you have your freedom is morally reprehensible. It is not a utilitarian argument. A slave does not have to prove to you that it is more beneficial for you for him to be free. Your neighbor's freedom is not dependent on how comfortable you are with their right to go outside or spend time with their friends. That is a society necessarily trapped by the fear of the most cowardly and defined by the emotions of the most uncertain. It's everybody's choice to take what risk they wish to take. And the lockdowns could not be more hilariously useless against the virus. And just my own local government has gone full retard with a curfew, a 10 o'clock curfew. Yet no one can explain why the risk of infection is somehow worse at night, as if COVID only comes out in the dark shadows when it can get people while they're not paying attention. We actually know someone who was fined $300 for driving on the road by themselves in an air-filtered metal box with no traffic around for being out past curfew because somehow that is a COVID transmission threat. So even if we throw out moral principles completely and treat this as a utilitarian discussion, which it is not, there's zero way to claim that driving alone at midnight in a closed vehicle is somehow a threat of transmission. In fact, the only thing where any kind of significant risk was placed is by the cop pulling him over, making him roll down the window, and then talk to each other. That's when someone was actually in danger of transmission. We literally do not think at all anymore. There is no individual judgment. It is about rules, and it does not matter how arbitrary, nonsensical, or completely destructive and evil those rules are. It is about holding the rules as God above the people around you. And you know, who are they written by? Who writes these rules? Like, are they very thoughtful and respectful individuals? Are they intelligent people who really understand the costs that is being borne by the average citizen? If anyone would use those terms to describe Congress or our regulatory institutions or our thousands of alphabet agencies, they deserve to be openly laughed at. These things are written by fools, career politicians, who literally put $600 in a massive stimulus bill for everybody and call it significant. For 6 months? Was it 6 months? 8 months? Of lockdown? Of shut down businesses? Of not allowed to have customers? And then it took them half a year of fighting about how much they were going to send to the drone bombing and ballistic missile defense programs of Israel? How much they were going to send to Nepal? How much corporate debt was going to be offered in it? How many new rule modifications or extra restrictions they were going to take into it? It's a joke. They are incompetent, and yet we are following their rules like they have some magic scroll that tells them all the answers, and where they have this some deep knowledge and predicting power that no one else has. Not only have they been constantly wrong throughout all of this, in spectacular fashion, no less, but they don't even care. They are so obviously interested in what concerns them and no one else. Why are we still listening to these people? And we just excuse it all. We just excuse it all if they have even the shittiest justification for it. Just the dumbest crap ever. It's just like, oh, well, now that those are the rules, and look at this really, really bad justification. So what are we going to do? Shrug. I cannot stress this enough. It is not a utilitarian argument. A slave does not have to convince you that he would be more productive if he were free. His freedom is the only thing we morally owe him. He needs absolutely no defense of it. It's evil to think otherwise. And maybe that's not how a lot of the world works, but that's because a lot of the world is evil. Simply put, I don't even care if that's your justification. It's like, well, that's not how it works. Okay, well, then those are the things that are evil, and those are the things we want to stop in the world. I mean, think about the framing of treating everyone else's rights and the ability to go outside and the ability to get with their friends as if it is whether or not it is or is not a potential virus transmission risk of a disease, regardless of its death rate. We'll ignore the fact that it's 99 point whatever percent survival. Just think about the framing that all of these human lives, hopes and dreams, the risks they're willing to take, what they do, how they make their living, that they're not human. They're just virus carriers. And anything they can or cannot do is decided under a 100% assumption that they have the virus, are carrying it, and what effect their freedom will have if they exercise it. Not an ounce of the consideration of the humanity of these people, the risks that they should be able to take in their own lives. None of this is even slightly present in the discussion. And the irony of it is that they hide behind pretending to be empathetic to other people. They literally use the elderly and the high risk as a human shield so that they can treat everyone else like their slaves. They can go into everybody else's house and tell them what to do. They can go into other people's businesses and tell them what to do. Now, everyone has every right to do on their property what they wish, but they do not have the right to force it into somebody else's home. It's treating everyone like a petri dish full of the virus, that they are grandma killers. It's guilty until proven innocent, and then even if you prove your innocence, you're still guilty just in case. And for anyone who thinks I'm downplaying the virus, I don't think the conversation is even the slightest bit different if we're talking about the Spanish flu, which was 1,000 times worse. I think the argument is the same. The consequences and risks would be orders of magnitude greater, yes, but that only means people would be making very different decisions based on their right to make them. But I do not believe our freedoms are a utilitarian or subjective discussion for the exact same reason I do not think which signatures are valid are a discussion to be politically decided in Bitcoin, or how many coins there will be in the next halving. These are not up for discussion. They are the only core objective things that make society function. And as soon as we accept that the political sphere gets to decide them based on who has the best justification, they are all gone. And talk about a slippery slope. You know, if this is all it took, we probably hit the point of no return 20 damn years ago. So thank God for Bitcoin, right? I mean, that is the value proposition, is that who owns what is not up for discussion. The monetary policy, the inflation schedule, is not up for discussion. The consensus rules, barring an absolute nuclear, this is the end of the world, Bitcoin can't survive it scenario, is not up for discussion. Your property rights within Bitcoin are defended by the cryptographic keys that secure them and nothing else. And all the justifications in the world for taking them away do not apply. Bitcoin cannot be reasoned with. And that is exactly how human rights should be treated. And again, it's just this really weird serendipity that Bitcoin came about when it did. That it is the arc as the rain starts to pour. You can say that analogy is melodramatic, but damn it, it's prescient. It's at least what I see it as. Like, I don't know what I would, like, I would feel so lost without seeing Bitcoin as a way out of this. I mean, seriously, where is the solution to these problems? Like, where outside of Bitcoin can you actually get integrity back into the financial system, where you can actually audit our monetary policy and secure our money from all of this unbelievable corruption and debasement. Like, what is it? You're going to vote your way out of this crap? Like, don't make me laugh. That's absolutely the most absurd waste of time that, you know, one could focus on. I couldn't think of anything that has a lower payoff for success than focusing on politics to solve these situations. They can't even agree on the outcome of an election. And it appears they can't conduct it either. I don't know, I feel really bad for the people who are hanging on to that one. That's just got to feel empty. Whew. Okay, anyway, not to get all dark on everybody. I blame it on Alex. Alex has this way. He always gets real serious in these posts. And I love reading it, and the Bitcoin Times is great. But I told you he was going to get me riled up. So I warned you before we got here. You should have known. But we'll end it here. A huge thank you to Alex Svetsky for putting together the Bitcoin Times and for all the great pieces in this. We have only dipped our toes in, and it's going to be epic. I have got to turn right around and get back to recording Parker Lewis's amazing piece that is coming. So don't forget to subscribe. I think I'm going to do the whole Bitcoin Times Volume 3. So we've got like, what, 6 pieces in this? Where's my link? Oh, I've got too much crap open. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pieces in this. And Bitcoin is the Great Definancialization is actually the last one, but I think we're going to do this out of order because that's just how I want to do it. Sorry, but poop on you if you disagree. All right, so don't forget to subscribe if you want to hear all of these amazing pieces and every other phenomenal piece in Bitcoin. That is what we do here. We make the best in Bitcoin audible for you to listen to. And then we get Guy's take. We let a guy talk a little bit about it afterward. And a thank you to all of the wonderful people, the Audionauts and my patrons that have made this show possible, as well as the awesome sponsors for this show. You know them, you love them. We've got the Hexa Wallet, mobile wallet. We have got the Bitbox O2 secure open source hardware wallet for your Bitcoin savings. And then, of course, the free no trading fee exchange and Bitcoin mobile banking services with Level.co. And you can find all of those at guyswan.com with 2 N's. Thank you all for listening to Bitcoin Audible. I will leave you today with my favorite quote from Svetsky's foreword, Bitcoin and the Legend of Prometheus. We should all take a moment to be deeply grateful for the introduction of an ark upon which we can board and from which we can later rebuild. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, take it easy, guys. This has been a 111 production, and you are listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.